Penance of Youth, Chapter 1, Past Lives. Vapor rose from the path as the hot spring sun and the morning dew conspired together. Old Swamp Lane was quiet as usual, and Ken Hewson whistled quietly as he walked, delivering mail on his round. He'd been a postman for 30 of his 59 years, and of all the routes he'd taken, this was his favorite. English countryside at its finest, with tall hedgerows of prickly brambles and blackberries bushes, the green fields springing into growth, oak trees standing majestic lining the sides of the lane, overhanging and sprinkling the pathways with mottled light, pretty cottages with blossoming wildflowers filling the gardens, the scent familiar and comforting, and the surrounding hills cupping the valley awash with new color. Ken had parked his bike by the village school. He had finished his round and was circling back to pick it up. At the end of the lane, he passed by the old industrial park, dilapidated and overgrown. Originally old farm buildings, before the manor estate was sold off. A private owner converted the buildings into industrial units way back in the 70s. Nature had taken it back. He passed these units every day almost, for 30 years, but something was off this morning. Normally Ken would not give it a second glance, but today he stood still and looked about. There was no one around. It was warm and sunny. The kind of morning that lifts your spirits and makes you want to dive out of bed. Two sparrows were screeching and fussing in one of the oak trees nearby, and Ken watched as they flew over the courtyard. It took a moment, and then he saw it. Confused at what he was seeing at first, Ken approached the gate to get a better look. What was that? Looks like someone's been fly-tipping, he muttered to himself, somewhat annoyed by the carelessness of others. Ken climbed over the gate and walked hesitantly towards what looked like old rags and spilled red paint. What a mess, he said, shaking his head. At that moment he stopped in his tracks. This was no fly-tipping. What lay before him was a middle-aged man, eyes open in terror. Blood surrounded the body. This was definitely a dead body. He stood on the spot, turning this way and that. A sudden feeling of nausea overtook him. He bent forward, put his hands on his knees, and gasped for air. My God! Ken fumbled in his pocket for his phone and dialed the emergency services. Police. Casey Porter lay in her bed. The sun was already pushing its way into the apartment. The alarm was still chiming. She reached out to turn it off, laid still for a moment, rolled over, and placed her arm on the body of the woman she had been dating for a while. At 49, Casey has blonde hair cut into a bob. She was slim, 5'8", and toned. She worked out regularly, and it showed. Casey slipped out of bed and was heading to the shower when her mobile vibrated on the bedside cabinet. Quickly, Casey picked it up and hurried out into the hall of her recently renovated apartment. DCI Casey Porter, she announced. Big John, as he was affectionately known, the desk sergeant was on the other end of the line, was part of the furniture at Southvale Police Station, a tall, heavy-set man with a bulging stomach, awaiting his retirement. Big John was very popular among the force, mainly due to his big blue smiling eyes and jolly demeanor. He would do anything for anyone, if he could, especially the new recruits. Morning, ma'am. Sorry to disturb you at this hour of the morning. Control just called in a body of a man found in the industrial units along the old swamp lane. Jesus, Casey exclaimed. Okay, John, I'll be there as soon as I can. You better call Stevenson. He won't be happy. The morning after his 36th birthday celebrations at the bar last night. Big John sighed. I know how he feels, Casey huffed. It didn't take long for DCI Casey Porter to arrive at the scene. Soko were already there waiting for the okay to start. Casey looked around. Old, dilapidated buildings with cracked windows looked haunting and dark inside. Relentless weeds grew from every crack in the walls and floors. The industrial units were isolated along a country lane, not a popular thoroughfare. You'd have to know it was there. I never even knew this place existed, Carl Stevenson muttered over Casey's shoulder. Casey startled a little. She had a distant memory of this place from when she was a child, playing with her brother and some local friends. Her grandparents had lived nearby, just up from the lane. The place always frightened her as a child, something she never understood until now. The views from here were beautiful, with rolling hills and the big oak trees now taking root in the concrete courtyard, where the body of a man lay butchered and slashed. Casey didn't answer him straight away. She stood with her hands tucked into the pockets of her jacket, eyes fixed on the courtyard, The contrast unsettled her more than the body itself, the quiet beauty of the valley pressing in on something so violent, so deliberate. It never sat right, death in places like this. It felt intrusive. "You wouldn't," she said eventually, her voice low, "not unless you had reason to come down here." Carl gave a faint grunt beside her. He looked pale, though whether it was the aftermath of the previous night or the scene in front of him, Casey couldn't quite tell, probably both. "Uniform secured the area about 20 minutes ago," he said, slipping into work mode with visible effort. "Postman found him. He is still over there." Casey followed his nod. A man in a Royal Mail jacket sat on the low stone wall by the gate, a foil blanket draped awkwardly around his shoulders. His face was ashen, eyes fixed somewhere far beyond the hedgerow, as if he were trying to look at anything but what he'd seen. Casey watched him for a moment, then turned back to the scene. "Let's have a look," she said. They stepped carefully across the uneven concrete, past encroaching weeds and patches of moss that had claimed the ground years ago. The SoCo team hovered nearby, waiting. One of them gave a small nod as Casey approached the body. Up close, it was worse. The man lay twisted slightly onto his side now, where the first attending officer had checked for signs of life. His white suit, once sharp, tailored, was soaked through, the fabric stiff and darkened. Blood had pooled beneath him, seeping into cracks in the concrete, turning black at the edges where it had begun to dry. Casey crouched slowly, her knees protesting faintly. She ignored it. His face, what remained of it, told its own story. Brutality, not efficiency. There was anger here, or fear, or both. "Multiple stab wounds," Carl said quietly, hovering just behind her. "And the head?" Casey nodded. "Blunt force first, I'd say." She leaned in slightly, careful not to breach the scene. The pattern of injuries mattered. It always did. "Overkill," Carl added. Casey didn't like that word. It was too easy, too neat. "Or panic," she said, "or something personal enough that they didn't know when to stop." Carl didn't argue. She shifted her gaze to the man's hands. "Clean nails, no obvious defensive wounds, at least not from this angle." "That's odd," she murmured. Carl followed her line of sight. "You'd expect something." "Unless he didn't see it coming," Casey said, "or he trusted whoever got close enough to do this." A breeze stirred through the courtyard, rustling through the weeds. Somewhere in the distance, a tractor hummed faintly, a reminder that life was carrying on just out of sight. Casey straightened slowly. "ID?" she asked. Carl shook his head. "Nothing on him. No wallet, no phone." Casey frowned. "But he's dressed like that?" Carl glanced down at the suit. "Yeah, doesn't exactly scream random victim, does it?" "No," Casey said, "it doesn't." She turned, scanning the courtyard again. The layout, the sight lines, the broken windows staring down like empty sockets. "You'd have to know this place," she said. "It's not somewhere you just stumble into." Carl nodded. "Tucked away. No foot traffic, no cameras that we've seen yet." Casey's gaze drifted toward the entrance of the rusted gate that Ken Hewson had climbed over. Beyond it, the lane curved gently out of sight, bordered by thick hedgerows. "Easy to come and go without being seen," she said. "Assuming no one heard anything," Carl added. Casey gave him a look. "Someone always hears something." Ken Hewson's hands were still trembling slightly when Casey approached him. She softened her posture instinctively, crouching down just enough to meet his eyeline without looming. "I'm DCI Porter," she said gently. "You're Ken, is that right?" He nodded, swallowing hard. "That's right." "You did the right thing calling it in," she said. "I know it's a shock." Ken let out a shaky breath. "I thought it was rubbish at first, just dumped. People do that round here sometimes, fly tipping." He shook his head, eyes glistening. "Then I saw his face." Casey didn't interrupt. Let him say it. People needed to get it out, or it stayed lodged somewhere inside them, making it worse. "I've walked that lane for 30 years, he went on. "Never seen anything like that. Never." Casey nodded slowly. "Can you tell me exactly what you saw, from the moment you noticed something wasn't right?" Ken took a moment, gathering himself. "I was heading back to my bike," he said, "finished my round. It was quiet, normal. Then I don't know, something caught my eye. Looked like a pile of rags, in the courtyard." He gave a weak, humorless huff. "I thought someone had been fly-tipping." Casey kept her expression steady. "So, you climbed over the gate?" "Yeah." He rubbed his hands together, as if trying to scrub away the memory. "When I got closer, I saw the red, thought thought it was paint," his voice faltered. Then I saw his eyes. Casey felt that familiar tightening in her chest. Not shock, she was long past that, but something quieter. Recognition, maybe, of how quickly an ordinary morning could fracture. "Did you see anyone else?" she asked. "Anyone leaving the area? Any vehicles?" Ken shook his head. "No, nothing. It was dead quiet." A look of reproach etched his face. Casey glanced briefly toward the lane again. Quiet didn't mean empty. It never did. "All right," she said. "We might need to speak to you again later, if that's okay?" Ken said quickly. "Anything to help." Casey gave him a small nod. "We'll get someone to take you home." As she stood, Carl stepped closer. "Uniforms are starting a door-to-door along the lane," he said. "There are plenty of cottages up the lane. Someone must have seen something." Casey nodded. "Good. Someone might have seen a car, even if they didn't think anything of it at the time." "And where is his car? Was he driven here? How did he get here?" She looked back once more at the body. White suit, no ID, brutal excessive violence. Her mind was already working through the possibilities, fitting pieces together that didn't quite want to align. "This wasn't random," she said quietly. Carl followed her gaze. "No." Casey exhaled slowly. "Find out who he is," she said. "Start with missing persons, local and beyond. That suit's not off the rack. Check tailors, dry cleaners, anywhere high-end. Someone will recognize him." Carl nodded. "I'll get Ryan and Ashley on it. And Mickey and Becky can work the background once we've got a name," Casey added. "Finances, relationships, anything that gives us a direction." She paused, then added, "And get someone on those buildings. I want every inch searched. If this isn't the primary scene, we might find where it started." Carl gave a small, appreciative nod. "Already ahead of you." Casey allowed herself the faintest hint of a smile, but it didn't last. Her eyes drifted again across the courtyard to the oak tree that had forced its way up through the concrete, roots cracking what had once been solid ground. She remembered it smaller, weaker when she was a child. Back when this place had felt like something out of a story. Haunted, but distant. Harmless in its way. It didn't feel harmless now. "Something about this," she murmured. Carl glanced at her. "What?" Casey shook her head slightly. "I don't know yet." But she felt it. That quiet unease that settled in her gut when a case wasn't going to be simple, when the surface didn't match what lay underneath. She turned away from the body, already reaching for her phone. "Let's get to work," she said. Behind her, the SOCO team finally moved in, the stillness of the courtyard giving way to the careful choreography of investigation. And beyond the hedgerows, the countryside carried on as if nothing had happened at all.